Now and Again is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcasting Network. For all things Cage, Keanu, and more, head on over to cageclub.me. That is cageclub.me. We play this song on the radio. We play this song on the radio. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Now and Again. This is the EP series, the first month of the EP series, where we kind of break from the now canon, because I think if you're anything like me, we all need a break from talking and listening to someone talk about terrible pop music. And we do some non-canon things. And last week we covered some reader mail with Nico. This week we're going a little different with some other soundtracks, some other compilations that you might remember. This week our guest, someone I know who has listened to this soundtrack probably as much as I did around age 14, Jared Brown, how are you?
I'm good. And yeah, probably more than you, actually, or about the same if we want to count all the times we've played together, this game together, too.
Yeah, so let's go right into it. You were a perfect guest because you were on the show for the 2016 Best Of, where you covered an autobiography of an extreme sports guy. And this is extreme sports right here. This is the soundtrack of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, published by Activision in August of 1999, just 1 year after the first Now dropped. And it is a video game for the PlayStation. It's kind of a sports time-based collectathon that was really elevated by its unique flavor. There weren't a lot of skateboarding games at the time. There was like Skate or Die for the Nintendo. What else?
Yep, and then also TNC Surfer and Skate, which was a clothing brand, actually, that put out a video game on the Nintendo NES back in like the late 80s, early 90s.
I also remember California Games for the Game Gear, but that was, you know, kind of this 2D. It was not much of anything. This was a 3D game where you could do street stuff and do a bunch of grinds. You can get into a half pipe. You had to collect a bunch of hidden stuff. You had to get high scores. It had really fluid controls,
which was amazing for the time. I think that's what really blew everyone away, was that it was actually easier to control the character instead of like having him look like he was doing something in the others. This time around, he was actually doing what they really did in real life.
Right, exactly. If you wanted to do something as simple as a grind, you could. If you wanted to get all of your speed on a half pipe and do a 1080 kickflip Christ Air, like, you could do that. It had this slightly exaggerated comedic, maybe not comedic, but over-the-top elements, hyperbolic elements to it, which worked really well. Because at the time, extreme sports was exploding on the back of like Tony Hawk and the X Games and all of those kind of things. Skateboarding was really in for the first time, probably since the early 90s, late 80s. What are your memories of that kind of scene at the time?
Oh my God. This was kind of the second wave that was starting up. So it was really like the most interesting kind of like start of it for me as well. From like the 80s and early 90s to now was the second coming of extreme sports.
Yeah.
So you had like that hip hop influence that was there starting to come in a little bit here and there. And it was actually really interesting because I remember like the first time I actually got into extreme sports was this. I was actually watching the X Games shortly before the game was released, actually, like, I think the week before, which is a really weird tie-in, that Tony Hawk actually landed the first 900 in competition.
Oh, so okay.
It was really weird that, like, this game came out, like, apparently, like, a month after he landed it. So I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, who is this guy? Why is he so big? What's so crazy about it? That was actually almost a month before. I'm looking at it right now, and the X Games that he landed in was X Games 5. And so he landed that was in San Francisco. So he landed the first 900 at that particular X Games. But then like a month later, the game was released. So everyone was like, what is this? Was that like a tie-in or something?
Huh? Yeah. So that's interesting because every character in the game had like, you know, their like skateboarding fatality that you build up the meter and like you did this awesome move. And Tony Hawk's was the 900. So in my head, it must have been it's like known he's able to do this. But that means they definitely produced this game not knowing if this move was even possible, which is pretty ballsy.
I saw all the after like highlights, and I think I was out to dinner with my family that night when that happened, and like I came back and I was like flipping through the channels and I came across SportsCenter like Tony Hawk lands the first ever 900 in skateboarding. I'm like, how the fuck did I miss that?
Did you see the video that came out recently where they put him out on a half pipe and see if he can still land the 900 like 20 years later. And it's just like he does it eventually, but it's just like 5 minutes of this much older man like falling really hard on a half pipe. And it's just kind of cringe inducing.
Yeah, I kind of saw that pop up when I was looking for the original video, but I'm like, part of me said to myself, like, you should watch it. Then I'm like, no, I don't want to see almost 60-year-old Tony Hawk just bail over and over again until he lands it. So I kind of said, oh, we'll watch that later.
And this started a huge wave of extreme sports-inspired video games as well. I remember around this time. Now, my timeline might be kind of off here, but I certainly remember playing a lot of Jet Moto. SSX Tricky 1080 for the N64.
I think,
a Matt Hoffman biking game?
Yes, I was just going to touch on that. This series actually spawned the what's called the Pro Sports Series. You had Matt Hoffman's Pro BMX, Sean White's Pro Boarder, which means snowboarding, and also Kenny Slater's Pro Surfer.
I remember
that. And then also you had this other title called Dave Mirra's BMX, which was actually a really good one. And it was this other kind of short-lived, really good game called Grind Session, which is actually not half bad.
I also have a distinct memory, and I've recommended We Hate Movies for movies before. I'll recommend Duck Feed Channel for video games, since you know we don't really touch on any of those things too much on this show. But Duck Feed has a bad video game program called Abject Suffering, which I absolutely love. And I always want to write in and request the Razor Scooter game that came out around this time.
God, yeah, I do remember that too. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's
the
thing that happened. Look that up on YouTube. That'll probably be in the show notes. If you even remember Razor Scooters, just the fact that there was a game for that, a Tony Hawk-esque game, is absolutely incredible. But I think it goes without saying that really, Tony Hawk 1 and 2, and maybe even 3, like I think there's a bell curve there with 2 being the strongest, that was really where these kind of games were at their best.
Oh, absolutely. I would actually even say 3 was kind of the peak for it, because after that, it kind of just started to go, oh, let's put Bam Margera in more games and give him more spotlight. And then after that, kind of like the whole skateboarding industry kind of just took a nosedive and a shit afterwards.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was going to say the exact same thing, was that kind of the Jackassification. And I have a soft spot for Jackass, as I wouldn't call it an extreme sports thing. I know that they did some stuff with that. And I know we've talked on episode 2 with Joe D about kind of the origins of Jackass coming from a bunch of dudes in a parking lot skateboarding and things like that. But
yeah.
I definitely think it's separate. And when Bam Margera comes in and like it becomes like a mini RPG where you have to run around town and talk to people and like do wacky stunts on your skateboard, like the game loses me a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. It's actually a funny, not really funny, but like I actually have a kind of a quick story to mention about Jackass. You should put this in the notes too. One of the founders of a local skate shop, this guy named Chris Naracco, who runs this skate shop called NJ Skate Shop, was actually on 2 episodes of Jackass. The first was where they had to eat all the raw eggs, and then the second was where they had to drink eggnog in Santa suits.
Okay, so he was on the puke episodes, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I actually have not. I keep meaning to ask him if he can eat eggs and drink eggnog to this day, but I haven't got a chance to yet.
Yeah. Yeah, Jackass took a weird turn. I recently was watching, I guess they have like a reunion special.
Yeah, like a year and a half ago or so or something like that.
Yeah, I was watching that. And boy, those guys, time and, you know, getting thrown off of curbs in shopping carts has really taking their toll on those guys.
And let's not forget Steve-O getting clean, so he actually feels pain now.
Yeah, that is a great point. He lost his mutant healing factor, which was just like a shitload of cocaine.
Dear God.
So, I mean, we kind of dipped into this a little bit, but memories of the game itself. I know that we played a lot of it after school in like 8th grade and certainly into freshman year of high school. I imagine, I didn't look into it too much. I imagine 2 came out very quickly after 1. Between the popularity and the fact that Activision is known for running their game series into the fucking dirt.
Oh, yeah. I think it actually came out shortly after, like maybe like a year and a half or so afterwards. But this one actually, the second one feels a little more polished and a little more involved, so, and I can actually give you the date. That was 2000, so that the exact date was September 2000, so like
so
almost
a year.
A little over a year after,
So that's a fast turnaround for a game, but to be fair, this game isn't and the second one as well are not that involved. Going back and looking at a speed run on YouTube, because I didn't have the capabilities of playing it again, I was surprised, and this happens a lot with PlayStation 1 and 64-era games, with how ugly it kind of was. It's very sparse when you're not in levels that are just like generic skate park.
Yeah, if you look at some of the shadows too, you could see like the pixel figures that actually there. Yeah, so it's like, I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, oh man, like that's pretty cool. And then now I'm looking at it now as an older adult, and I'm like, wow, that's like pretty basic.
Yeah, a lot of things from that era, be it video games or music, as we will talk about, haven't fantastically aged. Yeah, I certainly remember that kind of skate scene, the music being really important, especially since we kind of came from that Central Jersey punk and ska kind of thing. They really tied together in a lot of ways. I didn't love the soundtrack of this game, and going back and looking at it, I remember why. It's because it was very small. It was only about 10 songs. And actually, almost every song that I remember loving from Tony Hawk comes from Tony Hawk 2. Which, spoilers, we will be at least doing the trilogy. At some point, you will hear all three. Yeah. So we will be covering 1, 2, and 3. Not this month, but at some point, 2 and 3 will come out down the line. And 2 is definitely the one, I think, that is, you know, the Italian chef kissing his fingers of the soundtracks for the series.
Yeah, a lot of this was actually Tony Hawk himself going through his record collection saying, oh, this would be a good song to go in the game. Oh, this would be a good song to go in the game. Kids will like this. So yeah, that's where a lot of this comes from.
And this is the one that feels the least like market tested of all of them. And so that makes a ton of sense. And we can dive really right into the soundtrack. Note that you should follow along, check out a playlist on YouTube. There will be a link in the show notes, cageclub.me. All of these songs are about 2.5 minutes long, and if you remember them from the game, you only ever got to hear 2 minutes of them. So there's really, they move quickly. The entire soundtrack's about 20 minutes. Look it up or check out the playlist at Cage Club. Let's jump right in with Suicide Machines and New Girl. Do you remember this song?
Yeah, I actually had to replay the track just to figure out what it was. This was the one that I remember, like, him trying to understand what he was saying as a kid. Like, I couldn't figure out what he was screaming. And I'm like, what the fuck is he saying? Like, so I gotta salute you?
Yeah, so I gotta... It's just that. That's the chorus over and over again.
Yeah.
That's the part where I remembered it, was when we hit the chorus.
Yeah, they came back. I'm like, oh, this song. This was... It wasn't bad, but, like, I just said, like, eh...
Yeah, it definitely had some ska chords, but then it went into like organ parts instead of a horn section.
It almost felt like you were on a carousel for a little bit there, like when those parts came up.
Yeah, definitely. And it reminded me a lot of, local 2000 NJ Heroes Catch 22 with the going back and forth between the ska chords and the singing and the screaming. This was probably the song at that time on the soundtrack that I listened to the second most.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think it necessarily aged well. And as I've said on this show before, much to the chagrin of some of my friends, ska is really fucking dead. It did not age well.
Or as I say, it's on very limited life support, just waiting to die. And that's probably the best truth you can come up with right now.
Yeah. It just never was going to make it out of that era. You know what? There's another song on the soundtrack that is a ska song by, as you note, a not ska band, Goldfinger's Superman. And this is the song that I think everyone kind of has the softest spot for who played the Tony Hawk game.
Yeah, oh god, yeah. This, I actually went out and bought the Hang Ups, the album that this song is on, just for this song. And like the rest of the CD was, I'm like, hey, this actually isn't bad. And then like after that, they kind of like got weird a little bit.
But they had, this was off of Hang Ups, and then you had, right after that was Stomping Ground, which had like their cover of 99 Red Balloons. I think that had, that might have had Here in Your Bedroom on it. I don't know their discography super well. They were always one of those bands that I liked like two or three of the songs, but never really liked everything.
Yeah, their 99 Red Balloons was actually also in, I think it was Gran Turismo 5 or 6, too. So, like, the first time I ran through that game, I'm like, oh, Goldfinger again. So, I would actually kind of do restarts just to get that song to come up sometimes, just so I could actually hear it and drive around the tracks with.
Absolutely the same with this game is, later on, the games would have an ability, like a jukebox mode, where you can pick which songs played. This one didn't. So I just remember, like, continuously restarting the level until I heard those opening ska chords.
Yeah, and I'm still very much bummed out at the fact that I actually missed a chance to see them with Zebrahead and Real Big Fish that one summer.
Yeah, so I think that was our sophomore year of high school. They played in Asbury back when Asbury wasn't quite as rebuilt.
Yeah, if you wanted to go get crack, you would go to Asbury at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it was just a huge punk and ska, well, like pop punk ska fest. It was like The Starting Line, Zebrahead, Real Big Fish, RX Bandits, Goldfinger, I think, headlined with Real Big Fish. It was like one of our first shows where like there was a lot of people in the pits who were also really drunk and you just got punched a lot. So it was definitely like a rite of passage. You know, nothing hardcore or anything like that, but
yeah,
these guys put on a fun show. But again, like, a lot of that stuff doesn't age super well. However, lead singer John Feldman has aged interestingly, because now he is a producer, most notable for producing the 5 Seconds of Summer album. I've never listened to one of their songs, but I know they're boy bandy, like pop punk.
Yeah, kind of like the middle ground between pop punk and boy bands.
But he also produced the new Blink-182 album, California, and his voice, if you remember Goldfinger, you can hear his voice on one of the songs that has a big gang vocal breakdown. His voice is extremely prominent, so he's still kicking around. I guess he's probably Grammy-nominated now, since that Blink album was Grammy-nominated.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I feel like everyone kind of remembers Superman. And you still hear it pop up here and there today. It's kind of like the little brother of the impression that I get, which, like, even people who don't really love ska still will know that song if it comes on somewhere.
I think I actually heard Superman, like, in the past year, like, flipping through the channels one night, and I came across MTV, and they're like, and I heard it in the background. I'm like, why the frick is MTV playing Superman this late at night? And then I'm like, oh, never mind. It's just background filler for some show, so they had the rights to it.
Yeah, there's always weird music on, like, MTV interstitial ads that, like, you remember, and you're like, why are they using, like, the hook of a Tegan and Sarah song on MTV just looped to, oh, who cares, whatever. But yeah, so that's Superman. Always going to have a soft spot for that song.
Absolutely.
Song I have less of a soft spot for, and again, this is where it's kind of clearly diverging from that this is what is marketed towards quote-unquote skaters. He was a skater boy. He said, see you later, boy. Yeah. Primus with Jerry was a race car driver. Or, as Les Claypool would put it, Jerry was a race car driver.
Is it just me, or is he singing out of the side of his mouth the entire song? Like, that's what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, he sings like Jim Ross calls wrestling.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, I don't love the sound that Primus is doing with that kind of the slap bass, the twangy guitar. I get it. And here's the thing. I think I have some Stockholm syndrome because I think the song works in the context of the game, especially if you remember the levels that you didn't really skate around in. You just constantly went downhill and you were like racing against the level as well as the time. Like, this kind of works for that.
Yeah, that was the downhill jam and then the mall were both two really good songs for that. So, like, if you somehow got through the level and got back up, the song was still going before time ran out. So it's like, oh, I can get through this one more time maybe before the song ends. And most of the case, you would get like 3/4 of the way through it on the second run and it's like, time's up.
Yeah, and again, like, going back to the game and talking about how, like, in every level, you only had 2 minutes. So, like, Goldfinger Superman, for the longest time, I didn't know any part of, like, the bridge or the end of that song, because the song would cut off, like, right as the bridge was starting, and those 2 minutes of the song were all I knew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, me too, with that, definitely.
Some of these songs are, like, a minute 25, so it didn't really matter.
Yep.
Do you know any other Primus songs other than the South Park theme song?
Nah, not really. I mean, I do think Les Claypool is actually a decent bass player in that sense, but I never really got into Primus. I mean, last summer they played the Stone Pony in Asbury, and I was thinking about going to see him, but I'm like, there's gonna be a lot of weirdos there, so it's not gonna be a fun show. So I said, nah, that's a pass.
People love Primus. I just, you know, it's not something I ever really gained knowledge of.
Yeah, it was one of those things where like people would like, oh, you would like Primus. I'm like, yeah, no, thanks.
I did have one of those moments of nostalgia when in the song it kind of stops and Les Claypool screams, "Dog Will Hunt." I was like, oh yeah, I do remember that happening, like right near the end of all of my runs.
The video for that's actually pretty funny with that part. Like all of a sudden, like it cuts to he screams that, and then like all of a sudden the big instrumental starts and a pit opens like during a show. And it's like, well, I guess that's the cue to start the pit then with this song.
I guess it makes sense that there's pits at Primus shows, but that's weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, the video itself is just weird. And, like, I watched it a few times, like, just to refresh my memory so I could, like, mention it. But, like, it's just such, like, a weird, like, premises. And then, like, all of a sudden, like, you see him, like, that whole bass jams lead up to it. And then, like, he says, "Dog Will Hunt," and it cuts right to a mosh pit, which is, like, very weird, or a circle pit.
Hmm. Well, speaking of bands that definitely had some pits in their days, Suicidal Tendencies with Psycho Vision. This is a very much late era Suicidal Tendencies. Like this was on an album that came out earlier in 1999, which is kind of why it sounds to me like the punk bands of that time, like an Anti-Flag or any band that doesn't really matter. Like it's certainly not institutionalized era Suicidal Tendencies.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It was like one of the better songs in a game too, though. But it was just like, it felt so out of place at times. Like, it just didn't work, almost.
Yeah, and I think it's probably worth talking about both of, like, the kind of elder statesman punk bands in one swoop here is the Dead Kennedys' Police Truck also came in here. And kind of like how you get rap on mainstream radio, both of these songs were just, like, dead air every third, like, word or so.
Yeah, and I mean, like, with institutionalized, with the whole Kendall Jenner thing now, like, I can't help but laugh, like, all I wanted was a Pepsi! All I wanted was a Pepsi, Mom! I just can't help but laugh at that. I can't keep a straight face when I hear that song come up.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of spicy memes around that song and that commercial.
Yeah.
And, you know what, speaking of I guess, the police in that commercial and Dead Kennedys' Police Truck, am I not mistaken in thinking that, and maybe this was the sequel, that you could play as a cop as a hidden character?
Yes, yes, yes. Officer Dick, ironically enough, was his name for that. He was, I think, if you beat the third or fourth level of the game, he was unlocked.
There was definitely some, like, and, you know, skateboarding is not a crime. There's always been kind of this animosity between the two. This is before cops were just murdering people in cold blood, and they were, like comedic Ralph Wiggum types, you know, who ate donuts and had silly mustaches.
Yeah, Officer Dick was his name. He was definitely the hidden character. I think if you beat the school, you got him. There is also a tribute to a porn star in this one named Private Carrera, which was a play on Asia Carrera at the time.
Oh, wait, that was a playable character?
Yeah, she was an unlockable character in the first one as well.
Oh, okay. I don't remember. I remember, I'm guessing this is 3 when it started getting weird, but Spider-Man was a playable character?
Yeah, that was, that was 3.
Was it this game that had the hidden Roswell level, or was that 2?
No, that was either 2 or 3.
Okay. Yeah, game definitely started getting weird. But, I mean, I really like this Dead Kennedy song. Dead Kennedys are cool. This was actually the B-side to Holiday in Cambodia, I learned. So this song kind of has some history before this game, obviously. It's got that kind of surf rock feel to it with the guitar, which I really dig, and it fits this kind of game. And you always kind of have to ask, like, first, is this a good song? And then secondly, kind of with the Primus one, is like, if it's not, does it still work for the context of what it's trying to do? And like, this song is, you know, both really good and both works really well for what it's trying to do, probably better than any other Dead Kennedys song would work.
Absolutely. According to a wiki page, this is from some fandom page I just looked up for the Private Carrera thing. As told by Tony Hawk, Private Carrera was proposed by a certain Neversoft employee that had the name Carrera, and is actually a reference to the Porsche 911 Carrera, not the porn actress. I'm like, and okay, I'll buy that, but yeah, like, come on, that's what it's leading towards.
You got fake newsed.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely remember the cop, because I think the cop became like a playable character in all of the games at some point.
Yeah, he was there. I think actually I have the rebranded one for the PS4, and I think he's a playable character in there too, but I just haven't gotten around. But I tried to play it, and I'm like, this is so terrible. I can't even bother.
I remember that there was a game that came out that like really murdered like this genre. I think it was just called Skate.
Yeah, Skate. I'm looking at all three of them right now. It actually, instead of using the directional pad and the four buttons, it actually used the sticks, the at the bottom, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call those, yeah. the little joysticks.
Mm-hmm.
The skating community actually liked it a little better because of the fact that it was more realistic, and you actually couldn't like land like multiple kickflips in the air. So if you could do a double, you were a god. If you couldn't, then it's like, okay, it's more realistic.
Right, right. But and from what I remember of that game, it was also just like super buggy and not well made, which is kind of really what was the nail in the coffin for it.
Yeah, by the first one was kind of was really bland and bad, but by the second one, it actually opened up a little more, and actually they developed a storyline and everything that actually was a little bit more realistic than what Tony Hawk was doing.
Mm.
And like, sure. So it was basically a rise to a pro level. Like, you actually had just gotten out of jail, and who bails you out? This guy named Giovanna Reddit, who's like a big like documentarian in the skateboard world. And then you're like rolling along, and all of a sudden you run into Rob Dyrdek. And it's like, now at that time, Dyrdek was actually the biggest name in skateboarding. Bam was out, and Rob Dyrdek was in.
Hmm.
So you actually would, he was like basically your Bam Margera or Tony Hawk, but he was a little more of a lovable goof, I guess you could describe him.
Right. He wasn't like, I'm Bam Margera, and we're going to put an alligator in our mom's house until my dad has a heart attack.
Yeah, he was more of a like, go do this and come back and see me, and then we'll give you something else to do.
Yeah, like we're halfway through this mini soundtrack. Again, Tony Hawk 1 soundtrack, pretty short, pretty simple. All of the good stuff, again, we kind of learned, comes in 2 and 3, other than that Goldfinger song. The Ernie's Here and Now, I had no memory of this song.
I didn't either. Like, I when it came up, I'm like, oh, this song was on the game. And I was like, really? Like, what is this? Like, Linkin Park 1.0?
Yeah, you said it was Linkin Park in the notes. I suggested it's, like, a really somehow worse Zebrahead or, like, a bro-y Incubus. I think all of those work really well to describe what this is. It's there's a handful of songs towards this end where it's kind of doing that late 90s, like just the start of nu metal, but towards the tail end of grunge fusion that just sucks.
Yeah, it was like, it's definitely like that. I mean, like, this was like one of those songs where I was like, as a kid, I'm like, oh, I like this. Now as an adult, I'm like, man, the teenage me would really be disappointed that I don't like this kind of music anymore.
Welcome to Now and Again. You've just passed like your certification for being on this show.
God.
Speed Dealer Screamer.
And then Nothing to Me, which is actually two songs, which is really weird.
So what, did they just like staple one to the end of the other?
I think it's just the way it's recorded, though. I mean, it sounds like you could hear like a clear transition between the two. Like, Screamer's more of a borderline pure hardcore, and then Dreamer is like one of the, and like Nothing to Me, I'm looking at my notes like an idiot. Nothing to Me is more like a kind of like a Eligible Scream kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I listened to this morning to brush up, and I've already forgotten the song.
Yeah.
So that should tell you a lot about this one. Unsane's Committed. This one was actually pretty good. I kind of dug the song. Definitely forgot about this, but it was pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, this is actually, I remember, this was actually, like, I actually had to go dig a little bit to look for this song, because I'm like, okay, like, I do remember this song, but then there is they have a better song out there called Scrape, which was, when this game came out, MTV was trying to market themselves as, like, more of a sports network with stuff like that, like, trying to capture more of the youth that like that, instead of, like, mm-hmm. the top 40 people. They did this video countdown of the, I think it was the worst slams in music videos or something like that. And they had this one video called Scrape, which is actually nothing but skateboarders just totally eating it.
Nice. Oh, I definitely remember that.
Yeah, I remember I forget, it was like right after Tony Hawk came out, they did this special, and I was up at your house, and I think I like spent the entire day there, and we were flipping through the channels trying to find something, and we came across this one countdown, and we caught the tail end of this video, and we're like, we got to watch this again to see this. And the cool thing about this video is that Elisa Steamer, who's one of the playable characters, is actually in that video.
Just eating shit?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I forget. She's like maybe towards the end of the video. And she kind of looks like you can't tell the difference at this point, like, because the gender lines are so blurred in skateboarding still. So you just can't tell if it's because all of them had the long hair at this time and everything. And it's just like, and then the pop-up, I remember saying, Elisa Steamer featured in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater popped up on the screen.
Nice little marketing.
Yeah, so a little bit of marketing, I think, at that time for them. But this was like probably one of the better songs in the game as well.
Yeah, it's very, it sounds like just hardcore. And, you know, production-wise, it just doesn't have production, basically, which is, like, such kind of a staple of some of that era of hardcore. And, like, I think, like, if there's one complaint to be made about the game or the soundtrack, like, in general, it's that it almost feels a little too clean for where skateboarding was just a few years before this. And, like, this kind of informs where skateboarding and extreme sports is kind of going to go. And I didn't realize, like you said, like the X Games where he lands at 900 is just around this time. I figured this had to have come later.
And this is also like right. This is also like right before like it kind of went mainstream, because at right. this point nobody really knew what the X Games were unless you were like following it since day one. And it got to the point where like everybody knew who Tony Hawk was. Everybody knew who Chad Muska, who was another featured character in the game, was. And then, like, right around 2007 or 2008, the market just kind of crapped out again because it was so oversaturated. And, everyone's like, well, skateboarding's cool, but we're not going to market it because it's not worth it for our time. Yeah. So it went to this whole underground movement again, which was great. This was a time where a lot of the smaller companies started to pop up again and actually became a lot more like family-oriented, like family core brand, independent brand, stuff like that. The DIY movement came out, so like there were a lot of pop-up skate parks, like the casino in Asbury.
Okay.
And so that movement was really there, and then all of a sudden, and like right after this came out, in like the late mid 2000s, like right around when we graduated high school, it started to become more mainstream again because of like Bam Margera and all of them.
I feel like anything that kind of gets pushed out into the mainstream off of a big marketing push is going to have an audience that is really opposed to the audience that came before it. And you definitely kind of get that like very bro-y kind of extreme sports person that shows up in the early 2000s. I always think of the guys in Harold and Kumar to White Castle who like kayak through the convenience store.
Yeah, that's pretty much like the best example of who was coming out at this time and who was getting into it at the tail end. A lot of those guys like still were into it, and like you look at it, like you would watch the X Games and then like all of a sudden you would see like these guys and you're like, why are they there, like, and how come, like, where's the real guys who are should be up front? And like now, like the X Games is like a total shell of itself now because they cut out a lot of the like major events.
Yeah,
and like they have like rally racing, and I'm like, why is rally racing in this? Like the last really good like X Games was probably like maybe five, like almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
Where they just started doing the big airs, and this one guy named Jake Brown, no relation, actually landed something, but he had what's called a speed wobble on his board, and he just basically bailed, like to the point where everyone thought he was dead.
Jesus.
Yeah, and like he got up and like actually walked off the big air ramp, but they took him to the hospital, and as it turned out, he had couple broken ribs, and I think a bruised liver.
And I wonder if that's kind of part of why that marketing push ended. I'm sure someone was just like, how often can we watch these people concuss and like crush themselves? And wasn't there even, was it in the Olympics or was it at the X Games where someone died because like their snowmobile like flipped onto them?
That was the X Games 3 years ago.
Yeah, I knew it was recent.
Yeah. Yeah, he was trying to attempt a double backflip, and he had it, but he just over-rotated on the second one and did a half, and the snowmobile just landed on top of him and rolled over him.
Jesus, yeah, see? I just feel like, you know, we've talked about it on the show before. We kind of said, like, that attitude era, to use, like, wrestling terms. Like, that was really a thing from, like, 98 to, like, 2006, and then everything that kind of had any semblance of that just... we just stopped.
Disappeared.
Yeah. And I think so much of that is the lack of desire for corporations to put money behind it.
Yeah, well, now you're going to have skateboarding as an Olympic sport in 2020, so it's going to be a whole new ball game.
Which, it's crazy that they've been pushing for that for so long, but now that the bubble's burst, it's finally happening. Like, do you think that this is going to cause that to come back in any way, or is it too little too late?
A 50-50 thing? Because I know a lot of my skateboard friends hate this idea, because they don't like the body that's going to be governing the sport, and it's going to
be... Well, no one likes the IOC, so...
Yeah, well, not the IOC. There's actually a... International Roller Sports Committee. So you're lumping rollerblading and skateboarding into one, basically.
Do they also cover razor scooting?
That much I don't know, but I know that they have added what are called roller sports to the Olympics as well, which is basically competitive rollerblade racing.
Who the fuck has gotten in a pair of rollerblades since like 2005?
I think it was... Probably 2009 or 2010, somebody at the skate park over in Saraville spotted somebody actually rollerblading in the park. Are around, and they're pretty much as what they call a unicorn nowadays.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was like the last time I actually saw somebody on rollerblades was in a video from that. So that shows you how much it is. I know one of the skate shops I go to in the city sells them still. And they just don't move. Like, I've gone in there, I've seen the same pair over and over again, just sitting there waiting to be bought.
Sure.
But, yeah, nobody really rollerblades anymore.
Yeah, and we kind of tangented there, but I mean, it kind of encapsulated what I was saying, is that this song is not from that clean marketed era. This feels dirty. This feels like a basement show. This feels like a dingy skate park. And this soundtrack needed something like that. And, well, the song's not fantastic. It's very much generic hardcore. Yeah. Like, it's necessary.
It is. Yes, I agree with that.
And we're not going to really have this on the later ones. Like, they're going to move towards a lot cleaner music. They're going to stick with kind of hip hop, which this also sorely needed.
Yeah, desperately.
They're going to go with pop punk, or they're going to go with like classic punk, and that's it. And I guess every now and then you're going to get like Ace of Spades,
and also a little bit of like new metal mixed in there too.
Sure. Yeah. The Vandals, Eurobarge. I remembered this song because it's stupid.
Yeah, it's, like I said, pure goofy pop punk, which is like the perfect summary of it. And it was just one of those songs where like it would come on and you'd be like, oh man, like this is actually not a bad song to skate to, but...
Yeah, it's just about like an American asshole who thinks that like European like vacationers... are jerks, but like
they're not.
Well, it's only like 3 or 4 years after this that we are going to become the pariahs of going to other countries, so yep. This is like a very pre 9/11 song, and I remember having a Vandals album.
Did you have this one that had this song on it? I think it was off of Hitler Bad, Vandals Good.
Then yeah, I did have. I think that is the one that I had.
Yeah,
it was fucking terrible.
Yeah, the Vandals are pretty bad. This is the only song by them I will actually admit that I like. But other than that, it's like, yeah, no thanks.
They had a song that just was about mullets and what they call mullets in different parts of the world.
Dear God.
Which I mean, like I don't know. That's the one that I remember the most. But I also remember that when like CDs and physical media were becoming like a burden to have, and like I was gonna start let's getting rid of CDs, I'm pretty sure that Vandals album and like a Propaganda album were like the first two I just threw away.
God, there's another band I haven't heard of in a while.
I think Anti-Flag was right behind that. I listened to some real garbage at this
we
age.
we all did.
Yeah, of course. Even Rude with Vilified. I don't remember this at all. Bad.
Yeah, I don't remember it. Like, I basically said it was shortened. On the YouTube channel, there was a longer version of it. I'm like, this song is longer than 2 minutes?
Yeah, I saw that too.
I was like, wow, that's weird.
Again, one of those, you know, 90s intersections of grunge and new metal. It's got a straight-up white boy rap verse, and it's garbage.
Oh, yeah. When we get to one of the later games, when Ian Scott actually raps on Bring the Noise, we'll see a very good example of how it's actually supposed to be done.
Right. But even then, I think like it comes after Tony Hawk 3, once the series has kind of gotten significantly worse, before like actual real rap kind of makes it to the soundtrack for the most part. They really kind of keep with that rap rock stuff for a long time. again, I think it's a demos thing. I think at this time they think like, oh, only like suburban white kids love skateboarding. Yeah. Can't put any actual black artists on our soundtrack. But yeah, so that was kind of our short look at that soundtrack. Definitely worth revisiting. I don't know if the game is necessarily worth like getting an emulator and going back to, but the two and three probably are.
Oh, absolutely. Two and three are actually probably some of the best. I think even like the fourth one, if there was a fourth, I don't remember too much about that one, to tell you the truth. I mean, two and three are like probably the peak, and then after that, it just kind of swiftly goes downhill.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that on the Tony Hawk 3 episode, kind of how Activision ruins everything, and that's sort of partially why they're out of business now, and EA has picked up that mantle. And
with Skate, like, they kept saying, like, oh, yeah, we're going to release Skate 4 eventually. And then they're like, yeah, we're going to cancel the project. Have a nice day and enjoy your shitty, like, versions of that.
Yep. The bubble burst. And, you know, that carried over to video games as well. And eventually the soundtracks get really massive. Like, one of the Tony Hawk games, I don't know if it's Underground or one of the ones after 3, has, like, 75 tracks on it. Because they really started something with this, honestly. A lot of sports games like Madden and NBA 2K started doing this as well with licensed songs.
Yeah, this was really the kind of one of the first games I actually remember hearing like licensed music for, so that it can be used in the game. And it's actually to the point where that it's actually kind of awesome, because you're also getting that exposure to other songs like that you would not normally listen to outside what you like.
Yeah, no, 100%. It was having games on CD is really what allowed that to be possible. Like, you were never going to get licensed music on a Genesis that wasn't just like MIDI versions of a Michael Jackson song in Moonwalker.
Or like that terrible Aerosmith game that was in arcades.
Oh, God, Revolution X, yes.
I played that at Yestercades one time. I'm like, my God, this is so terrible.
Yeah, no, that's not a good game, and Steven Tyler looks like a fish monster. Yep. So that's the EP. Jarrett, where can people find you online?
Instagram and Twitter, at Jarrett Brown, all one word.
Cool. Thanks a lot for coming on, and you will at some point in the nebulous future, assuming we have one and we all don't just die, we will be back for Tony Hawk 2 and 3.
Yeah, absolutely. I will be with you.
So if you have an idea for the EP series, because we're going to come back to the EPs every now and then when I need a break from the canon of now, write into nowandagaincast@gmail.com or tweet it. That is at nowagainpodcast. Or you can write in and tweet anything you want. We're also on Facebook on the Cage Club Podcasting Network. And there is some big news for the Podcasting Network happening right now. We are adding a new show to the Cage Club library. More people are joining our lovely, weird, fucked up family. Wistful Thinking, a show about revisiting something from your youth and kind of determining, is it still good? Did it always suck? Am I an idiot? Was I always an idiot? Is coming. It's going to alternate weeks with Now and Again. On Facebook, I refer to it as the chaser to our shot, and Kara didn't hate that, so I'll use that again. Super excited for that show. Definitely check it out. And of course, we have the rest of the Cage Club family. P.S. I Love Hoffman is awesome and new, and you should check that out as well. And then there's Cage, Keanu, all of that great stuff that you've come to know and love about the Cage Club Podcast Network. Until next time, when we go back to the nows, we will catch you on the kickflip side.